Hi, this is Patrick Cox in the World Newsroom in Boston, and you're listening to The World in Words number 14. We're focusing on China this week, language there brings the nation together and often divides it. Also, on the eve of the Olympics, what's the most patriotic name for your newborn?
As a free man, I take pride in the word, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English?
There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Thank you, Borat. The World is co-produced by the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. You can hear The Big Show on more than 230 public radio stations around the U.S. For more on that and for more on all our podcasts, go to theworld.org. So, China. Of course, the Olympics is a source of great pride in China. What better way to express that pride than to name your child this?
奥运.
Aoyuan. Thank you, Connie. That's Chinese for Olympic Games. And according to a publication called the Beijing Youth Daily, more than 4,000 babies have been called Aoyuan. It's not a gender-specific name, but all the same, 92% of them are boys. Now, this is by no means the first time that Chinese people have chosen patriotic names for their kids. This name was popular in its time.
建国.
That means build the nation. Wouldn't really work in the West, would it? The name's Bond. Build the nation, Bond. On the other hand, that might work. Other Chinese names are Defend China, Space Travel, and the ever-popular People's Battleship. Yes, in China, language is politics. Well, it is everywhere. It just seems more pronounced in China, less hidden, perhaps. Going into this podcast, I felt really quite ignorant about China and its language and language policies. So I called the World's Beijing correspondent, Mary Kay Magstad. She told me that languages and dialects have long bedeviled Chinese attempts to unite, even among the majority ethnic group, the Han Chinese. You may think that Han Chinese speak either Mandarin, the official national language, or Cantonese. Not true. There are many, many other variants. Part of the confusion may be that written Chinese is one single language. It's when it's spoken that there are so many mutually incomprehensible variants, Mandarin being the dominant one. Mary Kay told me that Mandarin is one of at least seven different Chinese language groups, each group breaking down into many different dialects.
If you just look at Mandarin alone, there are more than 50 dialects of Mandarin. And within China, if you look at different Chinese languages, and by language I mean where you couldn't understand by listening, if you spoke Mandarin, for instance, what a Cantonese person is saying, any more than you could if you were a French person listening to German. But there are a lot of language differences in a country that prides itself on being ethnically quite pure in a way that something like 90% of the population is considered to be Han Chinese.
And is this multiplicity of languages and dialects the reason why the Chinese government has been trying to turn Mandarin into a national language?
Well, I think there's one very practical reason for trying to turn Mandarin into a national language, and that is that they want to be able to reach the population through the mass media, to be able to get messages out, to be able to get news out, to have people speak to each other in that language and feel like they're part of one nation. If you have people speaking a lot of different languages and feeling they're very much part of their own culture and not necessarily part of the greater whole, that could cause problems, rifts, whatever that the government doesn't want to deal with.
So this is, on the one hand, an attempt to forge a collective identity, presumably, mm-hmm. but also they run the risk of ultimately losing languages.
Well, they would say that they're actually doing quite a bit to save languages, that with some of the ethnic minority languages, I believe there were 10 or 11 of them that didn't have their own written language historically. The Chinese government encouraged them to come up with some sort of phonetic language so they could write down their stories and their history and so forth, and they could sort of standardize the language. Miao, for instance, which is connected to, it's basically Hmong, was one language that now has a written language and didn't before. But if you go out to Tibet or Xinjiang, where the Uyghur ethnic minority lives, they're a Turkic minority, they would say that they're losing their language because their kids are being funneled into Chinese language schools. And not only are they learning in Chinese from a very early age, but they come home and friends of mine or acquaintances of mine who live in those areas said, you know, the kids come home and they speak in Mandarin because, you know, they've learned in school that it's a sign of being intelligent and being forward-thinking to speak Mandarin, and it's a sign of being backward and poor and kind of stupid to speak your original language, Tibetan or Uyghur. So the people I've talked to about this who are in their 30s or 40s or 50s are a little despondent because, you know, the kids are absorbing this idea. For them, the future is in Mandarin. And, you know, perhaps for them, the future in some ways is in Mandarin because that's where the economy is. That's where the economic opportunities are. But yes, something gets lost in terms of the culture in the process.
That reminds me so much of many Spanish-speaking parents I've interviewed who are at a loss when their child comes home and refuses to speak Spanish anymore to them because they are learning English in the schools.
I think it's the story of many immigrant families to the States, where the generation that comes over tries to continue to speak in their language to their kids at home, but the kids are learning a different language in school. That's the language of the culture, and they think, hey, I want to be part of this culture. I don't want to be an outcast. I want to fit in, so I'm going to reject what my parents are doing and go with the group.
Right. As a practical matter, when you're traveling around China interviewing people, do you have to hire translators in parts of China where Mandarin is not understood?
Well, about 800 million people in China speak Mandarin.
You've got plenty of people to talk to then.
About out of 1.3 million. So that means that about 500 million don't or don't speak it very well. So yes, there are places where I need to get someone who can translate between whatever the ethnic minority language is and Mandarin so that I can understand it. That's even true sometimes in places where it's just a dialect. Some of the dialects are so thick that it's very hard to understand it if you speak standard Mandarin.
I remember once flying from Beijing to Nanchang, big city in Jiangxi province, and I was with two Chinese, Mandarin Chinese speakers, and they didn't understand the local dialect. The locals didn't understand them, and we had a little standoff at the airport with the taxi rank.
Yeah, now the one thing that everyone does understand if they speak some Chinese language is the characters. So even if you can't understand what the person's saying, you can pull out your notebook and write it down. And the characters are the same from Cantonese to Mandarin to Shanghainese to Manchu. It sounds different in each language, but if you read it, you get the meaning. So that's one way that people can still connect with each other.
The world's Mary Kay Magstad in Beijing. Mary Kay mentioned Shanghainese. Well, that's what our next story is about. How many people in Shanghai like to speak it precisely because they know outsiders don't understand it. Here's the world's Matthew Bell.
Shanghai's booming economy attracts all kinds of people from all over China. But when they arrive, there's one thing that really bugs some of them, and that's the local dialect. Shanghainese is incomprehensible to many newcomers. Some say it sounds more like Japanese than Chinese, and they want people in Shanghai to give it up already and just speak Mandarin. That's the official language of the People's Republic. Many locals see things differently. Shanghainese people are known for being fiercely proud of what distinguishes them from the rest of China, their history, their cultural identity, and their dialect. Wu Leijing works behind the counter at a downtown convenience store. She says about half of her customers come in and speak Shanghainese straight away, not Mandarin. Wu is proud of the fact that some foreigners can even speak a little Shanghainese. She says that speaking the local language can make newcomers feel like they're part of this city. But the truth is that few outsiders ever master the dialect, and newcomers complain that Shanghai natives use the local dialect against them. They say locals have created something of a linguistic cartel to exclude outsiders. James Ferrer says he's heard those complaints a lot over the years. Ferrer is a visiting sociology professor at Fudan University in Shanghai.
I think the people that feel most excluded are the ones who come in as sort of elites. You know, these are people who are university educated, who are white-collar professionals, and they come into the city expecting, you know, this to be just like Beijing or Shenzhen, where everybody's speaking Mandarin. And they get here and find that, you know, the Shanghainese are still cliquey and speak their own dialect and socialize in Shanghainese, even in the corporate socializing. So you get people that really feel like if you don't speak Shanghainese, you cannot make it here.
China's central government is doing something about that. It's stepping up a campaign to promote the official dialect of Mandarin in Shanghai. Service industry workers are now required to greet people only in Mandarin. Some of them will have to pass language proficiency exams or sign up for Mandarin classes. TV broadcasts in Shanghainese have been taken off the air, and banners are showing up in public places that read, "Be modern, speak Mandarin." Zhang Rupei is one of the officials in charge of setting language policy for Shanghai. Zhang says the central government's first priority is to promote Mandarin. He says it's appropriate for people to speak their local dialect at home or among friends, in places of business and in schools. Zhang says people in Shanghai should stick to Mandarin, but he adds that the government is not trying to stamp out Shanghainese altogether. This radio comedy show is one of the few programs allowed to broadcast in Shanghainese. Gu Min Min is famous for his ability to imitate many different Chinese dialects. He plays the lead character on the show. Gu says that promoting Mandarin is important for China, but like other Shanghai natives, he's worried about the future of the Shanghainese dialect. Fewer and fewer young people are choosing to speak the dialect at home these days, and he says the government's campaign will certainly limit people's opportunities to use Shanghainese. So is Gu worried about the government taking his radio show off the air? He's not worried about that. He says his Shanghainese comedy show is very popular. And he adds it also brings in more ad revenue for the state-owned radio station than any other show, including the ones in Mandarin. For The World, I'm Matthew Bell.
I love that expression Matthew used, linguistic cartel. Okay, on to Chinese characters. And here's a nice Olympic story. You know the way that in the opening ceremony, all the athletes from each nation come out into the stadium, do a lap, wave a flag, and that they start with the A nations and they end with the Z nations? Well, in Beijing, forget A to Z. It's Chinese characters this year. The order that the countries come out in will be decided by the number of strokes in the first character of a nation's Chinese name, which puts the great Olympic nation Australia, normally near the start of the parade, at the end. That's because it's got 15 strokes in its first character. So it will be nation number 203. Number 204, by the way, is Zambia. Always at the end, it seems, whatever system you use. Now, not all Chinese people will be able to figure any of this out. Proficiency in writing Chinese characters is slipping. To be fully literate in Chinese, you need to know a couple of thousand Chinese characters. And to read serious literature, you need to know at least triple that number. And many Chinese people just aren't using characters enough to be able to remember them. The villain seems to be, yep, the computer. Back to The World's Mary Kay Magstad in Beijing.
What better way to get through a backlog of work than settle at your favorite coffee joint, grab a cappuccino, and pull out your laptop? That's what Liu Pei is doing. He's using a regular keyboard to type in pinyin. That's a phonetic way of writing the Chinese language. For each word typed in, up pops a choice of Chinese characters. Liu picks the one he wants. This is how tens of millions of computer-using Chinese write their language every day. Liu Pei says he's starting to forget how to write some characters, but he doesn't seem bothered.
When I forget the strokes for a character, I just check the computer. So if you forget how to write a few characters, it's not a big deal. It doesn't have much impact on your daily life.
But some Chinese fear there will be an impact on the continuity of Chinese culture as more and more computer-using Chinese adopt Liu Pei's attitude. Already, university professors are reporting high levels of student mistakes in writing Chinese characters, and this is in a generation that had a few years of writing by hand before they got onto computers. The next generation, now entering primary school, might be even worse. The thought pains Wang Tongxin.
He's a retired appliance repairman who comes to this Beijing park every morning to practice calligraphy. He dips a shovel-sized paintbrush into a bucket of water and paints characters on the pavement.
These people who always use computers, their handwriting is sloppy, and they even forget which strokes go where. But this is art. This is something to be enjoyed and appreciated and passed along.
Wang's father, a professor, passed the love of characters on to him. But Wang grew up under Mao, when workers were glorified and scholars were considered bourgeois. So Wang spent his life as a repairman. Now he's back to his first love. He gives free calligraphy lessons to any passerby who's interested. He points to a middle-aged man and says, "That's my student." Then he points to a much older man who's standing nearby and says, "That's my teacher."
88了，八十八了，哇，八十九了，八十九了，哦，八十九了。
He was saying he's 88. He's like, 88, I'm 89.
These old friends are clearly proud they're doing their part to keep the long history of the written Chinese language alive. Each character is a pictograph containing a full idea. For instance, the character for peace is of a woman under a roof. These pictures and meanings remained constant for thousands of years until Mao Zedong simplified many of them in the 1950s. It was a controversial move because it made it harder for Chinese to read anything written before the 1950s. But literacy did improve until recently. Now people are starting to forget how to write even simplified characters. China's Ministry of Education has taken notice. Yu Hong directs a Ministry of Education department on written language usage. She says too many sloppy mistakes have been appearing in newspapers, magazines, even in government publications. Yu says it's especially egregious when the people making the mistakes have an impact on how others use language, people like journalists, teachers, and civil servants. So, the Ministry of Education has just introduced a new literacy test for such professionals. Yu says she hopes that passing the test will become a requirement for getting hired or promoted. She believes this, plus increased stress on proper writing in schools, will help reverse the creeping deterioration of Chinese written language skills. Of course, that's assuming that others actually believe that increased reliance on computers is fueling a cultural crisis. Liu Pei, the guy typing in the coffee shop, doesn't.
Computers can also help us understand our culture. For instance, we can read traditional Chinese literature online and get whatever information we want about Chinese history. I don't think handwriting Chinese characters is the only way to value our culture.
Back in the park, every morning brings myriad displays of Chinese culture kept alive. There are groups doing Tai Chi, and others flowing through graceful sword dances. And there are the old men with their giant calligraphy brushes, painting elegant strokes that will soon dry and fade, but which they hope will help ensure the written Chinese language they love so much does not. For The World, I'm Mary Kay Magstad in Beijing.
That's it for this week. Next week, more on Chinese. Chinese learning English. English speakers learning Chinese with hilarious results. Send me your comments. The address is language@pri.org, or you can post a comment on the Facebook group, The World in Words. Thanks for listening.